Good morning, sir. Is it Mr. Adams?
Pat Cooper.
Okay, Mr. Cooper, good morning to you. I'm sorry, this is a petition for further review.
That's correct, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Pat Cooper. I'm with Fraser Stryker in Omaha, and I'm appearing today on behalf of South Fork Homes. We're asking this court to reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court's opinion, which granted summary judgment in favor of South Fork, and which determined that the statute of limitations barred Mr. and Mrs. Adams' claims. As Your Honor pointed out, this case arrives here on South Fork's petition for further review. And while we've litigated a number of issues in this case, I think the focus of our hearing this morning is really pretty narrow. And I think the question for your review today is, when does a cause of action for a defective construction accrue? Or said differently, when does the statute of limitations begin to run on a defective construction cause of action? The Court of Appeals concluded that because South Fork provided a construction warranty to Mr. and Mrs. Adams at the time the project was turned over to them, that somehow told the statute of limitations, and that instead of having a four-year statute of limitations that runs under 25.223 from the date of substantial completion, that the statute of limitations didn't begin to run until the expiration of the warranty period.
And where did that idea come from?
To be perfectly honest with you, I have no idea, because that was not a position that was argued by anyone at the trial court or at the Court of Appeals. It showed up for the first time in the Court of Appeals opinion and wasn't supported by any citation to any authority either. I think if you go back and look at this court's prior decisions, that's the Leader Construction case, for example, there was an express warranty given by the builder in that case, and yet this court concluded that under 25.223, the statute of limitations ran.
The trial court said we go back to the grading, right?
It did.
Now, did the records show that grading of subdivisions is often as years before the construction of houses?
That's true, and that's true in this case. In this case, the developer was also a party at the district court level, and the grading occurred, I think, in 2003. Construction in this case wasn't substantially complete of the house until September of 2007. At the Court of Appeals, I took the position both that there were two ways you could affirm Judge Coffey's order, either by taking the approach that Judge Coffey took or by looking at this substantial completion approach. Here today and on our petition for further review, we're focusing only on this question of whether the statute of limitations accrued at substantial completion, not back at some prior date, because I think the Court of Appeals concluded that that was correct as to the developer, but not correct as to the builder itself.
Now, as I understand it, the house was completed in September. Is that right?
That is true.
And the warranty deed, though, wasn't until October.
The warranty deed conveying the property to
right.
the owners, it's true that that warranty deed was filed with the Register of Deeds in October. If you look at the deed itself, it was actually executed in June, I believe. But if you look at this court's precedent,
which date should be the start? Should be when the warranty deed have anything to do with the start date?
Nothing whatsoever, Your Honor. Nothing whatsoever. Because as we all know, sometimes deeds get filed on arbitrary dates. They may get delivered, but not filed. What this court has consistently said is that the start date is substantial completion, not possession, not closing, not the date of a deed. It doesn't matter when the deed was dated.
When was substantial completion in this case?
Substantial completion in this case was no later than September the 20th of 2007.
And why that?
A couple of reasons. I think, number one, the parties defined in their contract what would happen upon completion of this project. And if you look at page, I believe it's 22 of Exhibit 1, pardon me, in the Bill of Exceptions, you'll see in the addendum to the purchase agreement, it says that upon completion of construction, we're going to have a final walkthrough of the property. And what we know from this record, I believe around page 120, 121 of Exhibit 1, you see that the walkthrough took place. And there was a checklist that was performed on this walkthrough. And so that walkthrough never happens until the project reaches the stage of, at the very least, substantial completion, if not completion. And the party's agreement contemplated that there would be a punch list that would arise out of this final walkthrough. And the homeowner orientation inspection form that's found in the record lists the punch list items that needed to be completed still at that point. And they're relatively
minor
items.
Well, would substantial completion then arguably be when the punch list is completed?
No, that would be total completion. And that's really an unworkable standard for when to start a statute of limitations, because
isn't the concept of substantial completion a little mushy and difficult to work with, too?
I think it's the most manageable standard you can possibly have. Oftentimes you'll find that parties define substantial completion in their construction contracts. Certainly, I would agree with you that substantial completion can be a question of fact. There aren't any disputes of facts here in this case, though.
Under your theory, how many days did plaintiffs miss filing this case?
At least 2 days, Your Honor. They filed on September 22nd of 2011, and the final walkthrough occurred on September 19th and 20th of 2007. It may well be that substantial completion had occurred prior to September 19th or 20th. That's just based on the walkthrough and the punch list. When we can tell that it certainly reached that stage. The reason I think you can't use total completion as a standard is because anytime there's any allegation of a defect or something that has yet to be finished on the project, whether it be there's a doorknob missing in a basement closet or some touch-up paint that needs to be repaired, the argument would be made that we haven't reached completion yet, and so the statute's not running yet. That means that the cause of action hasn't accrued yet. And that simply doesn't make any sense under the law or common sense, I think. So I think there's good reason why this court has historically applied a substantial completion standard. And I think what's really a little bit odd in this case is that within about 10 days of when the Court of Appeals decided this case and used this strange trigger date for the statute of limitations, it also decided a case called Village of Donovan versus Staroska Group, which I believe is...
Did the trial court in this case determine a substantial completion date, or did they just focus on the grading date?
The trial court in this case just focused on the grading date. I think on this record, though, the court can determine as a matter of law what the substantial completion date was, certainly that it was no later than September the 20th, because as I indicated, the record is undisputed about exactly what was left to be done. And you can find it on that punch list where there's really only a handful of items left to be done. And what the court has said in the past is, the test for substantial completion is the project, has it reached that stage of the project that it is fit to be used for its intended purpose? I mean, this is a house. Could it be lived in is essentially the standard. Yes, sir.
Would you finish your thought on 2 weeks later, the Court of Appeals decided another case?
Thank you. There's a case called Village of Donovan versus the Staroska Group, and they used substantial completion in that case as the start date for the statute of limitations in a defective construction case. So I would suggest if you place this case next to the Village of Donovan case, you have two cases decided by our Intermediate Court of Appeals 10 or 12 days apart from one another that are completely inconsistent with one another.
With respect to your argument today, somewhere here in the course of this appeal, is this correct? You're claiming the date of discovery was December 09. How does that relate to this discussion?
Sure. Obviously, if you discover or should have discovered your cause of action within the first 3 years after the statute began to run, then you don't get the benefit of the discovery.
So you don't go into the discovery discussion.
You never get into discovery here, because I think under the admissions that are in the record, and there's a lot of admissions in the depositions. In fact, I believe Mr. Adams admitted at the Court of Appeals that what he said there, and I've cited the time of that argument, you can go watch it for yourselves, but he said the time at which everyone would say, this case took on a whole new light and there's no question we were on notice, was December of 09 when Thrasher Basement came to their house, inspected it, and said, yeah, we think you may have a foundation problem here. And in the following month, Mrs. Adams sent a number of emails, which are also in the record, where she's talking about the substantial and pervasive problems that they're having with their home. So no question they were on notice within the first 3 years after substantial completion. And with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Adams, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Adams on behalf of the plaintiff, myself. First thing that I would like to point out to the court is that this was a motion for summary judgment. And I would suggest that many of the questions that Your Honors put to Mr. Cooper are questions of fact. I look at the Luder case, which is heavily cited by opposing counsel, and that case was decided after a bifurcated trial where they took the statute of limitations issue out by itself and said, we're going to submit this to a trier of fact. The dates that opposing counsel would suggest that trigger the running of the statute, all of those dates are not clear. I mean, he wants to define them as September 19th and 20th, and we did the walkthrough. I submit that that's a question of fact. We didn't take possession of that home until September 25th, I think is what the evidence was. Isn't it a question of fact, as Your Honors previously submitted? What is completion? Isn't that a question for the trier of fact? This issue that opposing counsel submits to the court as an issue of first impression, I would agree with that, that we don't have a definitive answer out there whether it's substantial completion or completion or total completion. None of the cases that opposing counsel cites flesh out this one-year warranty repair punch list event. They don't get into that event and as it relates to completion or substantial completion. None of the cases deal with that. I do think that this is a question of fact that should have been allowed to go forward.
A question of fact because the applicable law is what? It's a material question of fact.
Because the applicable law is that the point at which a period of limitations begins to run must be determined by the facts of each case. There is enough language in the statute for the statute of limitations that leaves some room for interpretation.
Are we talking about substantial completion? Is that the standard?
I'm not sure it is. I know the Luder case mentions
substantial completion. Isn't the standard what is?
Completion. And I think it's a nebulous, ambiguous term to be applied as the facts of each case come up. And you can look at that Luder case and you can say, come on. This was the University of Nebraska. They had their own in-house engineers and architects monitoring that problem. They knew, their own people were saying, hey, what's going on here? So that's a little bit of the higher standard. I think that's fair to hold them to a higher standard. That Luder case mentioned substantial completion twice, and it didn't hone in on what is completion. That really, I don't think that was the issue at all. It was essentially the university knew for a long time, and they sat on it, and their own people were telling them, hey, you got a major problem here.
You think that was used in lieu of discovery of the problem?
I'm sorry.
Was the substantial completion phrased as a substitute for discovery of the problem? In Luder?
I think that's how the discussion came up. The discovery issue in the Luder case, as I recall, was that there, when they did a walkthrough, that's another thing about the Luder case, there was never, even though there was a one-year inspection, there was never a coming back around and doing additional repairs by the defendant in that case. There was a review at the one-year mark, and that review, the defendant had representatives there, they had experts there, and they said, there's an error here. And the university did nothing. So I think the Luder case is very, very distinguishable. My point on the Luder case is simply that it doesn't really define a standard that is dispositive of my case. That's what I'm saying.
Would you agree that sometime in 2009 was the time in which you discovered that there was a defect in the foundation and that created the problems and the subject of this lawsuit?
I think that's fair. Okay, I think that's accurate.
That would be within the 4-year period from the date the house was substantially completed.
Yes.
So isn't our determination as to when the statute runs a question of law and not a question of fact?
I think that issue that you're speaking directly to has to do with the discovery rule. If you're going to apply the discovery rule in my case, I don't know that you have to apply the discovery rule for my case. I think
I don't think we could apply the discovery rule because you knew within a certain period of time certain number of facts that would put you on notice that there might be a potential lawsuit for the negligent construction of the house.
Right, and I think that date is sometime in the latter part of 2009.
Okay, so we're not talking about a discovery rule extending that period for 2 years after you discover it. We're just talking about when the limitation of action commenced, either from substantial completion or, you say, it's from final inspection.
But we could apply that discovery rule from this set of facts here. And again, I think this is a question of fact. If we go with the grading and the 2003, and if that was what triggered the running of the regular 4-year statute, but then we say, okay, when did the Adamses discover this so that they knew or reasonably should have been put on notice? And that date, I think, is somewhere around December of 2009. And if we use the discovery rule from that standpoint, we were within the discovery rule. So if you...
You would tack on another 2 years on that, or 1 year, whatever it is?
I think that's what you do. I think you say you've got to file... I think that's what the statute says, is that you have to file within 2 years of when you discovered or reasonably should have known that there was a cause of action. And if that date, that 2-year start date, is December 2009, I think we still file.
But you knew within the 4-year statute period of time that you knew or should have known that there was a cause of action.
Well, what I'm saying, if you go by that 4-year statute as interpreted by the trial court here, I didn't. And this, so what I'm saying is I can get to a factual scenario here where, and my argument is that I did file within the 4-year statute of limitations. I did that.
Well, when do you claim the statute began to run?
I would say when I took possession of the home. That's what I would say.
Okay, so the discovery rule then has no application at all because both of those were within a 4-year period.
You're absolutely right.
So we're not going to be applying a discovery rule extension yet.
It depends on whether you find...
you knew.
What I'm saying is that if you went with the trial court's rationale and you were stuck with the decision that the trial judge made in this case, and he said that discovery, that initial... not discovery, but the initial statute started to run back in 2003, then I think that does lead to a reasonable application.
When did you take possession, I beg your pardon?
September 25th, 2007.
Okay, so you take possession in 2007, and you're saying that's a, at least under one argument, a start date. And then you know of these troubles in December of 2009.
Yes, and the reason I
say
December...
I don't say discovery, I'm just saying you know of these troubles.
The reason that December of 2009 stands out to me from the evidence here is because after they came through and did those punch list items, okay, in September of 2008, things start to come back, and they don't come back immediately. It takes months. It takes the better part of that next year to reach a point where we're going, oh my gosh, there's something going on here. This isn't punch list stuff. And that's when we had Thrasher Basement come in and do a couple of assessments, and that's when they put us on notice that you got a problem here.
And in any case, do you agree that the Court of Appeals didn't get it right, whatever they did?
No, I don't agree with that because I think they were looking at the facts of this case, and I think that is a reasonable interpretation.
The Court of Appeals has turned this into a 5-year statute, have they not?
I would disagree with that. I would say that we go back to the first questions that we talked about here. What is completion? What is substantial completion? Is it fair? Is it fair for a defendant like South Fork who says, if it's a buyer-owned lot, which it wasn't, then the buyer has the responsibility to ensure it's buildable. Well, it wasn't a buyer-owned lot, so Southfork, you're on the hook. Even in the contract between Manchester and Southfork, Manchester put Southfork on notice that you need to do some soil compaction here. That's in there. So they had a duty. I know I'm out of time. I think all of these are excellent questions. I think they're mostly questions of fact, and summary judgment was improper here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He has 24 seconds.
24 seconds, Mr. Cooper.
Quick. Very briefly, Your Honor. No question that the threshold issue for you to decide here is a question of law, not a question of fact, and that is when does the statute begin to run? With respect to the comment about turning this into a 5-year statute of limitations, I would just ask you to look at the warranty language itself. All we warranted was that at the time the project was complete, the project was in substantial conformity with the plans, specifications, and change orders. And when you look at the allegations made in the plaintiff's complaint, there is no allegation anywhere in this case that anything that took place after the construction project was completed, but no allegation that anything was done wrong at that point.
So your view of the warranty is prior to the warranty springing to life, it's completed.
This
warranty is just a separate promise, you'll do stuff.
The warranty is moralizing the completion of the project and saying what we just did, what we just built for you,
doesn't spring to life until at completion.
That's true, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Court is adjourned and you are excused.